My name's Charlie. I'm an addict. We're both learning at the same time that my topic is more will be revealed. I don't want to sit and think about it beforehand. Well, you guys are really considerate, actually. For a room this size, it's hard to talk, and everybody's real quiet for Corey. I think that's real awesome. I've been to a lot of meetings where it's a little more chaotic than this. You guys are great. So more will be revealed. Let's see. My clean date is 7604. I was originally from Johnstown, Pennsylvania. I moved to Philadelphia and then Manhattan and then Baltimore. And then I got into a graduate program in Houston, Texas. And on the plane right now, not on the plane right now, so briefly before I left, I relapsed. I decided that I'd rather get high than be insane. One of the things that led up to this, I was going to meetings every day. I had a sponsor. Just a pretty, maintaining program. And so one day at work, a security guard steals something of mine, except I didn't know it was a security guard. And then they accused me and charged me. They were going to charge me with a federal fraud because I said it wasn't me. And they had these steel frames. And so at this time, I guess I had about 2 years clean. So they had these steel frames, kind of looked like I had a bag. It was a computer. Kind of looked like I was walking out. It was like one frame. They were real shitty. And he showed it to me. And he said it was me. And I looked at it, and it kind of looked like me. And see, I have one of the best things I had going for me in recovery early on is that I thought I was insane, which means I did not trust my perception. I had to ask people what was real. I had to ask people if I was looking at things from a way that was, productive if not truthful. They don't need to be the same thing. I'd rather go with productive if I have to pick one or the other. And so I had a reservation that if I was going to be batshit crazy, I'd rather just do it high. And so they let me stew in that for about a month. Without telling me that they did some investigative work and found out it was a security guard. And in that time, I decided that I was just going to go ahead and get high. Because obviously, I'm too crazy to function because I had no recollection of stealing my own computer, right? So anyway, why? Because I didn't do it. So it turns out, it was a security guard. I didn't know. But I made the decision to get high, and I got high. So I go to Texas. And at this point, I had I worked a lot through school. I got a degree. I got into a graduate program. I was getting paid to go to school. And in 9 months, I had gotten arrested, had been banned for life from Rice University campus. I signed a piece of paper that they would arrest me on site if I went onto their property ever again. And they took my bike, too. And, I caused a lot of chaos. I got put on probation. Probation in Texas I went to Harris County. And, Harris County's scary. Harris County, I've never seen a place like that ever before. If going to jail was ever meant to be a scared straight type of thing, it worked for me that night. I learned about sleeping with my face in my shoe. Oh, man, it was rough. And then they said, call your parents for bail money. I said, no. I said, keep me. I don't care, because I was fucking retarded. But you know why? Because I was in the holding tank, and the holding tank was standing room only. Only, one dude had a shirt on. It was crazy. Everyone was like 8 times my size. All these shirts were, wait till you see how big these shirts are. All these shirts was too tight for everybody in there except me. I got some tattoos, but they aren't on my face. So I said, keep me, right? And they just looked at me, and they let me go on my own reconnaissance. Because they knew what I did not know. So they let me out. So I got a probation officer, and she said, I knew I was going to have to be clean, right? And magically, I'm unable to not use against, my own will. I'm using against my will at this point, like I always have. I remember being a kid in Johnstown, going in, I see this now because I go hiking. I go in the woods and I get high, and that worked for me, right? And as I got older, somehow, like, you ain't allowed to just go in the woods and get high all the time. Like, you're supposed to do other shit, right? If that was, like, my expectations in life, I probably would have kept doing that, you know? But I was able to manage myself, like, manage my using. And I remember being aware of the progression, how I was no longer able to manage my using. Like, it would take 3 months for me to hit a bottom. And then all of a sudden, it would take only 1 month. And then, oh, God, and then I'd smoke crack, and then it's like 2 seconds, you know. So I ran out of time on my disease. My disease didn't give me the little party break that I got when I was young, before it got bad, you know. It got bad right away. So I couldn't stop. So I went to rehab in Houston, and I got clean. On my day pass, I went to a meeting. I was real lucky. I went, they had an open door policy. This is the worst for me, right? I'd rather be locked. I wanted to be locked in. That's why I went there, right? They said, no, you can leave, but you can't come back in if you leave. I didn't want to leave and not come back. I wanted to sneak out and then get high and then come back, of course. And so I tried to do that. And they caught me. Someone told on me. For some reason, they let me stay. And just at some point, I realized that I'm about out of chances. You know, can't believe I got the chances that I did get. Looking back, you know, it's like I don't know if I get what I deserve or not, because my life ain't over yet. You know, but on a moment by moment basis, it doesn't look like I ever get what I deserve. It looks like I got a lot more breaks than I deserve, that's for sure. And now, you know, I'll get to it, but in clean, now in recovery, sometimes I don't get what I think I deserve either. And, you know, and that's okay. Maybe it all averages out in the lifetime, but I guess I'll find out. You know, but I got a lot better than I deserved a lot of times, you know, especially early in recovery. And so while I was in rehab, like, I still had a job and school and a car and an apartment when I went into rehab. But when I was in rehab, people started having meetings about me, right? And then they want to come have a meeting with me while I'm in rehab. And by the time I got out of rehab, I lost everything. So I go to this meeting. It's the closest one. You know what I realized? That has always worked for me. Whatever the closest thing is to me, that's the one I pick. Like if it's a group, if it's a veterinarian, just going with the closest one to my house works like really great. Anytime I try to be creative and like do some other shit, like it all gets messed up. Just pick the closest one to me, it always works. So I go to this meeting, there's this guy from Buffalo talking about shit out the basic text, and I asked him to be my sponsor. He said yes. So I'm not from Houston. Everybody sounded like they were from Hee Haw. I felt they did. There's a lot of truth there. Houston's funny because it's a big city, but people think they're in the country. So he took me to his house, which was like a shack, one of those old shacks. It was in a place called Third Ward. And he made me chicken with his friends and made me feel so welcome, you know. And so it was easy for me to go back after I got out of rehab, you know. All I had to do, I got a couple suggestions that I was willing to do. It was always a problem I always had. You know, going through my sixth step, I found out that I had the most problems. I didn't realize, I mean, it's like, in recovery, I was like, oh, yeah, I got ego and pride issues. But I didn't really understand how deep they were until I went through that in the steps, you know, until I made lists of stuff. Like, I always say, yeah, I got this problem or this problem, but I don't really know it until I do it in the steps, you know? And so, I wanted help, but I wanted to be able to pick and choose who would help me, like who I wanted help, who I got help from, you know? And what I found out was, if it was a guy from Hee Haw wanted to help me in my recovery, I had to take the help. It just becomes a matter of life and death. And, you know, the magical thing about dope is that it helps me to not see that I'm coming to a point between life and death, and I got to make a choice. So I went to meetings, I stayed clean there, and I would go to meetings at this rehab. About a year goes by, I'm living with this chick that just got out of the rehab. They let me back into the school. I was working. Things was about as chaotic as it's supposed to be at a year. Like, there was, I had some chaos. I go to meetings every day. I was still on probation. Like, I'd hear readings in the meeting about balance, and I would laugh. Because, like, I got hundreds of hours of community service to do. I got to, like, work 10 hours a day. I got to make a meeting. You know, I got to spend time with people in recovery. And then I got this girl. It's like, I guess I'll get to have some balance later. Right now, I'm just got to get all the shit done. You know? Sometimes everything isn't always for now. Sometimes some things are for later. You know? And it's true. I did. I got to have balance later eventually. The last time I got high, 7504, I was getting a tattoo on my chest. And, I always get some, like, you know, I got high with the Big Bird and Cookie Monster from Sesame Street. Like, I always get some retarded shit, you know? I'm getting a tattoo. As the guy's tattooing me, he gets in a fight with this girl and she's throwing shit at him, you know? And then she says she's pregnant. And then he asks me if I want to go get high in the back with him. And I did. And you know, it's like, it just, getting high didn't work for me anymore. Like, I felt crazy, like, all the fight, they kept fighting. Like, it was not, like, I didn't get what I thought I would get. That's like, there's always, that's like my trend for, you know, my life until recovery is that I always had an impression that I was going to pay something and get something, right? And I always give them that, and I never got what I was supposed to get, you know? And drugs quit giving me what they were supposed to give me. But I got high again. And so I was like, I spilled this lemonade. It's just not gonna work. Like, they're fighting. I spilled some lemonade. I drove away with the CDs on top of my car, and they fly off. And my girl's pissed when I get home. And she's like, you know. So I had to, next day, out of desperation, I go back to my home group. And home group's called Alive and Kicking. And it's a fashion show, especially on birthday night. It's the most egotistical thing. It's good. I mean, they're clean and they're celebrating or whatever. And what they would typically do is go up and get their key tag, medallion, and then leave. And all their friends leave with them, right? So no one's there by the end. So I said, if my sponsor's going to make me get a white key tag again, because I don't know if anybody else in here has relapsed after some time clean, but it's a little, it's humiliating. It's not, I mean, it is humbling. It actually is both in this case. And it's hard to go up and get that white key tag, but I knew in my heart that if I didn't get that white key tag at my home group, that I'm going to have a hard time being clean. You know, that it's probably not going to work for me. So I figured if they're all going to be like them and go get their key tags and leave, then this is a perfect night for me to get a white key tag at the end of the meeting. Ain't no one going to be there. I'll be damned if they didn't all stay. It was like a room, like 100 people just stayed. So I did it. And it's not like, no one's ever surprised, you know, but I did what I had to do for my recovery, you know. And, you know, here's the nice thing. As long as I don't get high, I don't have to do that again, you know. So that was, what, like 6.5 years ago or something. Now, so in recovery, a lot of great things happened. I got married. I bought my first house. I got a PhD. I got a really good job. I moved to Florida. I got divorced. She kept my dogs, kept my house. I lost my job in Florida. Here's what my boss said in my letter that asked me to resign. He had to give me a formal thing. He was not confident in my ability to make good decisions. I could not argue with that. Well, I'm just like, recover, like the face of Texas flashes in my mind as he shows me shit. We're people that are constitutionally incapable of always making good decisions. I didn't know I needed to be able to do that in order to have this job, or I wouldn't have taken it. He didn't tell me. So I resigned at the peak of the unemployment opportunities in Florida. And I took another job, and it was a nonprofit. Like, all I really wanted was, all I want now is a job where a boss doesn't treat me like a turd. Like, that's pretty much it. And, gee, I find a hard time finding that, you know? I'm a hard worker. I'm moderately smart and talented. It's like, good, you know, come on, cut me a break, you know? And So I had a difficult time with this. And, you know, and part of it is that, you know, normal people now, they got these things called life coaches. You know what a life coach does? Sponsors them. And I had a life coach for a minute before I realized that I just need to talk to my sponsor more. I had good insurance at one point that covered it. So I worked for a nonprofit managing an animal sanctuary. And they lost all their funding, so... And this is in Florida, and so they said, you are going to go move up to Palm City on 27 acres on a swamp and live with the animals. I said, all right. I worked 14 hours a day, every day, until I was freaking out. Because I like the city. And I like animals and shit. I just don't like reptiles. And the swamp is a scary place at night. So... it was all right, you know, but there was a meeting like a half hour away, and everybody in that town was retired, and everybody had like 30 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous, moved down there from New York, and everybody made a noon meeting. It was awesome. It was really, really wonderful. One day, they decided that I was fired there too. It's just, that's what it was. They just up and, they didn't have money to pay me. Is what, you know, but they had already let go a lot of other people, but, so they gave me, because I was living on their property, they gave me, and I know this is not legal, but they gave me 24 hours to vacate. So with the whatever money I had on my charge card, I got a truck, and I moved up to my sister's in Orlando. Excuse me one second. So 2010, wow, I haven't been more suicidal in my entire life. I started working a job as a bike taxi driver, and I would ride people on the back, and every day I wanted to ride my bike in front of traffic. I went to meetings and I told them I wanted to do it, and I told them I didn't want to talk about it. It was a hard year. But, you know, because I was clean and I wasn't such a psycho for once in my life. Like, I was a psycho. And my sister knew it. And she didn't trust me to be around her family or friends anymore and shit like that just because I was a lunatic. I didn't steal her shit or nothing like that. I was just fucking weird. And she let me move in with her and her fiancé. And they paid for me, they supported me for almost a year while I did whatever jobs I could do. I worked three jobs. I waited tables. I had you heard me say I had a PhD. I was waiting tables and doing bicycle taxi and going to meetings and just trying to feel all right. It was okay. You know what's neat in this program, when I came here, I didn't really have things that I liked. I just had things that I liked to do when I was high. And after a couple years, like 3 years into this thing, I did a lot of service work in Houston. I did H&I chair and for a city that size, it's not that well organized, but like it's bigger than a small town, right? So, I mean, I did a lot of GSR and stuff, and like around 3 years clean, like it was a lot of fun. Like all the GSRs would meet before the area meeting, and we'd have lunch, and we'd discuss shit, and talk about some controversy. And like it was really rewarding. I did a lot of service work. I did a H9 meeting that I started with some other people for 2 years straight. Didn't miss it once. It's the only thing I've ever been on time for constantly in my entire life. And it taught me not to hit on girls in the program. In fact, that was the first time I was able to, you know, I thought that I might not want to hit on newcomer girls for some reason. I didn't want to embarrass the fellowship. I cared about that more than any chaos I had in my life because I cared about Narcotics Anonymous. You know, then a couple years later, I got my first motorcycle. I got a 1990 Lincoln with rims and shit. I had a white pit bull. I thought it was fun. You know, I had fun in recovery. I had a lot of fun. That Lincoln was cool. The shocks died on it and became a lowrider. Well, they fun. Well, I thought, you know, in my mind, I think it looks cool because they ain't got shocks on it because I'm fucking stupid. And then before I turned 30, I wanted to quit smoking cigarettes. I never thought I'd be smoking when I was over 30. And I got problems now even because of it. I guess I smoked for like 10 years. And it's the best, besides getting clean, it's the best thing that I've ever done. And I've struggled with it too, but because of that, I started doing volunteer work at the Houston SPCA. I did 40 hours a month, and I've seen some of the worst things I've ever seen in that animal place, with open sores, and I got to help these animals that didn't trust a person to come within 10 feet of them, you know? Like, I got to experience, like, the most beautiful things in recovery because I was clean and because I was allowed to care about something else. I had some time because I wasn't out trying to get high all the time, you know? And I'll take someone else's hobby, too. Like, my girl or whatever, she did gymnastics. She actually could do gymnastics. I've never done a cartwheel in my life. I can barely dance and shit. I'll steal anyone's hobby. So I went and started doing gymnastics. I did gymnastics at the age of 30 for like a year or whatever. It turns out you cannot be depressed if you're bouncing on a trampoline. It was excellent. You know, so I experienced just some of the most amazing stuff in the couple years I had clean. Like, just by making these choices of trying new things and experiencing life. You know? Thanks. So finally, I got a job. I moved back up here. I don't love it, and it ain't what I want and all that, but I'm grateful to have a job. It was tough. It's hard. You know, I just realized that, I mean, one of the biggest struggles I ever had in recovery was self-acceptance and self-worth, right? A lot of shit didn't make sense. Like, I thought I could get high and function. Like, none of this shit made sense. Like, I would get results and, like, not use logic with them, right? But at least with this one, I was a dirt ball and I was insane, and that's how I saw myself. So I was accurate on one. And I don't know who I am separately from what I do. When I do good things, I think of myself as a good person. And I'm just working that out right now. I ain't got a lot to say about that. A lot has changed for me lately, you know. This whole past year, I changed everything about how I see myself, you know. But some really wonderful things happened. My sister and I were so close as kids, and we got to reconnect after 10 years. Like, really, you know, have a relationship. It was pretty great. It's pretty great, you know. I just feel real blessed to be in this process, you know, but I'm still struggling. I got some health problems, and I feel my heart hurt sometimes when I'll be out running, and I'll keep running. You know what I mean? So, it's all right. I keep going to meetings and stuff. I'm working with my new sponsor, and we're doing some step work and all that. So, you know, more will be revealed, right? Thanks.